I'm proud to be a part of this administration. We're not stopping. I don't care what the judges think. I don't care what the left thinks. We're coming.
He doesn't care what the judges think. They're coming.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, as well as a whole bunch of other fine terrestrial air and internet streaming affiliates, not to mention most of your favorite podcast sites and apps. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. The courts are holding, at least somewhat, you'll be happy to know, I think, maybe, against the ongoing constitutional coup that is now underway by the President of the United States and Desi Doyen. Can it be described as anything other than a constitutional coup at this point, it seems to me?
No, I don't think it can. You might add an administrative coup as well, but yeah, it's all still a coup.
Thankfully, Donald Trump remains really lousy at the job of presidenting, so maybe we'll be able to continue to hold out until someone, somehow, somewhere, figures out how to do something about all of these nightmares. For now, I think the best I can do is help you understand these nightmares and understand what's actually going on to make it a little bit harder for you to be fooled and misled about all of it. As Trump continues to push harder to take autocratic control of even more of the federal government than he has already taken control of, unlawful control of. President Donald Trump on Tuesday called for the impeachment of a federal U.S. District Court judge, James E. Boasberg, after Boasberg blocked the Trump administration from deporting Venezuelan migrants without due process. Due process? Who needs it? Or at least Boasberg tried to block the Trump administration from doing so, but they did so anyway, in defiance of Boasberg's court order. In a social media rant on Tuesday morning, Trump criticized the judge, the chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, as a, quote, radical left lunatic of a judge, a troublemaker, and agitator who was sadly appointed by Barack Hussein Obama. Trump's post on social media began. It continued. Boasberg, he said, was not elected president. He didn't win the popular vote by a lot. He didn't win all seven swing states. He didn't win 2,750 to 525 counties. He didn't win anything. This is all in all caps, by the way. I won for many reasons. In an overwhelming mandate, but fighting illegal immigration may have been the number one reason for this historic victory. I'm just doing what the voters wanted me to do. This judge, like many of the crooked judges I am forced to appear before, should be impeached. We don't want vicious, violent, and demented criminals, many of them deranged murderers, in our country. Make America great again. Well, if we don't want criminals in the country, where's Donald Trump going to live? Now, I need to stop for a moment just to sort of pinch myself and allow you to pinch yourself to remind you that was a statement today from the President of the United States of America. I know he does and he, you know, says, tweets stuff like this all the time, but we really should not get used to it, as clearly we already have, because that paragraph that I just read to you, two-thirds of it in all caps, is just insane. It is still insane, no matter how used to it we have become. Aside from the call for impeaching a federal judge, Trump also seems to be arguing that because he won the popular vote, barely, by the way, not by a lot, as he suggests, he won by less than 1.5 percentage points, along with the seven swing states that he, because of that, that he should somehow have the power to overrule any judge who defies him. He's already taken over, as I said, every inch of the executive branch, including executive branch agencies that are supposed to be independent from the White House. He's got control of both chambers of Congress, thanks to the compliant Republican majorities in each and a Democratic Party in the Senate, which has not yet figured out how to use what little power it has in the minority, for example, to filibuster spending bills that grant Donald Trump even more executive powers, actually makes the ones that he's commandeered unlawfully, make some of them lawful for him to control. And now Donald Trump is coming after the judiciary branch, or at least the parts of it that he has not already corrupted. In the case that touched off our president man baby on Tuesday morning, Judge Boasberg has been overseeing the case involving the administration's late night Friday invocation last week of the rarely invoked Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which was previously invoked only during wartime because, well, the more than two-century-old law allows for the expedited detention or removal of non-citizens of nations that have officially declared war against the United States. Now, there are a lot of right-wingers out there on Fox News and elsewhere, certainly on Elon Musk's X, as he calls it, trying to hoax their brain-poisoned followers into believing that there was some sort of secret interpretation of this law that only Donald Trump truly understands about this law that has been invoked only three times in the 226 years since it was adopted by Congress and signed by then-President John Adams. And the way that they're sort of trying to hoax people is by failing to mention certain words in the law, by claiming, for example, that while there is no declared war, I guess they have to admit that, no declared war between U.S. and Venezuela, several hundred immigrants, of which Trump is violating the law to deport, that a declaration is not necessary of war is not necessary to invoke this act because the statute also allows deportation in response to, quote, any invasion or predatory incursion that shall be perpetrated. Now, as you know, Trump and Fox and the rest of the MAGA dupes have long been claiming that an alien invasion is underway at our southern border. Who knew that we were being invaded by Venezuela? But okay, that's the claim that they're making. And for the record, if you hear the rest of the law, you'll realize how weak that argument is as far as being able to use it to invoke the Alien Enemies Act and deport anyone you like.
I was thinking of a different word other than weak arguments, but I can't say it on the radio.
FCC. Yeah. That's right. Behave. We're already in enough trouble. So here, for the record, here's the whole paragraph in question from that statute. So you know, from the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which has previously been invoked just three times in the War of 1812, in World War I, and in World War II. Too much shame, by the way, as it was used to inter thousands of Japanese American citizens at that time. Anyway, here's the paragraph in question, quote, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that whenever there shall be a declared war between the United States and any foreign nation or government, or any invasion or predatory incursion shall be perpetrated, attempted, or threatened against the territory of the United States. Here's the important part they love to leave out. By any foreign nation or government. And the President of the United States shall make public proclamation of the event. All natives, citizens, denizens, and subjects of the hostile nation or government, being males of the age of 14 years and upwards, who shall be within the United States and not actually naturalized, shall be liable to be apprehended, restrained, secured, and removed as alien enemies. Now, even if you ignore the lack of a declared war between the U.S. and Venezuela and focused only on the, quote, or invasion or predatory incursion part of that that clause, that sentence, you got to work pretty hard to also ignore the fact that the, quote, invasion or predatory incursion in question must be, quote, perpetrated, attempted, or threatened against the territory of the United States by a foreign nation or government. Did the foreign nation or government of Venezuela perpetrate an invasion of the U.S. and I heard nothing about it? Did they do so by having a bunch of their citizens, some of whom are purportedly charged with but not convicted of crimes in their homeland, come here rather than face those charges back home? Because the people who came here don't want to go home. They think they're going to be thrown in jail or something if they go home. So they weren't sent here by a foreign government as part of some sort of incursion or invasion. None of it makes sense. But that is what the Trump administration is claiming as their legal justification for sending hundreds of migrants who have not been convicted of anything in this country to state-run prisons in El Salvador, where the U.S. is apparently paying that government to store these unconvicted men who are supposedly members of a Venezuelan gang, though none of that has been proven in a court of law either, to store those men without any sort of trial, access to attorneys or anything else for how long? Years at a time? Maybe? Who knows? We are just disappearing these people. At least that's what the Trump administration is trying to do. And Judge Boasberg was trying to prevent. So back for a moment to Trump's little tantrum on Tuesday morning against U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, who at the end of an unusual Saturday evening hearing over the weekend ordered a hold on the deportation of those men to allow more time for him to determine whether their deportation without hearing under Trump's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 was actually lawful or constitutional in any way. Judge Boasberg ordered the administration to pause their planned deportations of these men, and if there were already any planes in the air taking them to El Salvador, then those planes should immediately turn around and the men should be brought back to the U.S. That was the judge's order. The administration appears to have completely ignored the judge's order, sending three plane loads of people to El Salvador, and the judge subsequently called for a follow-up hearing so that the government could explain what the hell happened and why they completely ignored the judge's order and did not turn any of those planes around. More on that in a moment, but that is what led to the rant by the President of the United States on Tuesday morning, calling for all caps impeachment of a federal U.S. District Judge, the chief U.S. District Judge in the D.C. Circuit. Just hours later, after that little rant by Man Baby Trump, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, issued a rare public statement in apparent response. And no, it was not a smackdown of Donald Trump. It was not pushing back at Donald Trump, as I've seen some characterize it throughout the day. It was a very polite, gentle tap on the wrists at most. But because even that is very unusual for the Chief Justice, I guess. It has been characterized by some as a takedown of Trump. It is no such thing. It was two sentences long, and I shall read it to you in full. Quote, "For more than two centuries, it has been established that impeachment is not an appropriate response to disagreement concerning a judicial decision. The normal appellate review process exists for that purpose." That's the entirety of John Roberts' takedown of Donald Trump. Now, you know, like I said, that he would respond at all, I guess. He rarely does. So somehow that is a thing, I guess, even if some might read it to, you know, send a message of, hey, Mr. Trump, just review that issue on up to the normal appellate review process and we'll help you out on this thing once you get here, Mr. President. Take it easy. It's okay. We got your back. You could see it that way as well. As the Times' Adam Liptak reports, the case with the Venezuelan migrants and Judge Boasberg has emerged as a flashpoint in a larger debate over presidential power and the role of the courts in reviewing the actions of the executive branch, the supposedly co-equal executive branch. The Chief Justice's statement did not take sides on that debate, and he has often taken a broad view, to say the least, of president's authority, notably in his majority opinion in July, granting Mr. Trump substantial immunity from criminal prosecution.
Okay, so criticizing a judge and saying that that judge should be impeached is bad, but committing crimes while president, that's okay.
For Justice John Roberts, sure. I know it sounds twisted, but that's what happens when you get a corrupted Supreme Court. Now, just days ago, by the way, speaking of corrupt, Donald Trump made a really long speech at the Department of Justice. Among the insane things, he said that it ought to be illegal to criticize or intimidate judges. Remember that? He said, quote, "It should be illegal, and it probably is illegal to criticize judges." That was just days ago. I guess he meant it should be illegal and probably is illegal to criticize judges that Donald Trump likes. On Monday, at the White House press briefing, a Times reporter pointed out to Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary, that Trump often criticizes judges and that Elon Musk has called for the impeachment of judges who oppose the Trump administration. She replied, quote, "I have not heard the president talk about impeaching judges. I know you mentioned Mr. Musk's tweet, but I have not heard the president of the United States ask that." Hey, guess what? Guess what happened today? As to the question, you know, where the Trump administration's Justice Department defied the judge's order, well, apparently they continue to do so. Over the weekend, the White House claimed that the planes that Judge Boasberg had ordered to turn around with his order, the administration claims, oh, the planes were in international airspace at the time. Therefore, they are not under the control of a U.S. federal judge. That, of course, is nonsense. As the plaintiffs challenging the removal of the Venezuelan migrants argued, the men were in the custody of the U.S. no matter where the planes were, at least until the plane landed and the men were handed over to El Salvador. On Monday, the DOJ attorneys defending Trump were ordered to tell the judge exactly when each of the planes took off and landed. On Saturday night, the DOJ attorneys, however, were unprepared to do so on Monday, but they asserted that no flights left after the written order was placed in the docket, but they refused to provide departure times. The judge had actually given an order from the bench to turn around the planes, and then it was about an hour or so until his written order was completed and placed into the docket. And now there's a question, does an order from the bench count? Is that a real order, or do we have to wait until the written order is placed into the docket and so forth? In any case, they wouldn't do it on Monday. The judge ordered them to do so on Tuesday. Apparently, they failed to do it again on Tuesday, saying it would be some sort of security issue or something. So now the judge has ordered them to do so by Wednesday, in this time a sealed filing to the court so they can't claim that it's some sort of a security issue. We will see if they do so on Wednesday, as many continue to cite exactly this as the beginning of a constitutional crisis where the president defies a court order. And then what? Nobody knows. But the real moment of crisis, I suppose, will be when the administration defies a Supreme Court order, as I suspect this case and many others eventually will reach them, likely sooner than later. And we'll see what happens if John Roberts and at least five justices decide to find against Donald Trump. Will he follow that order? At that point, that will be officially the constitutional crisis. In the meantime, many have argued we are already there with all of this going on. For the moment, anyway, as I said, the good news is that at least by and large, the judiciary continues to stand strong against the worst of Trump's excesses in any event, which is, of course, why he and his unelected buddy and top campaign donor, Elon Musk, are now turning their attacks against the judiciary. Late last week, we reported on the federal judge in California who determined that so-called probationary workers at six federal agencies, those are workers who are either in their first year or two at an agency, or they are workers who have been recently promoted.
Senior staff that has been promoted and has only recently been inside their higher level position.
Or they've worked at a different federal agency for years and years. Now they've transferred to a new one. Those are probationary workers. There are slightly fewer restrictions on removing them from their job, but there are still some. And so late last week, we reported on the federal judge out here in California who ordered that workers at six federal agencies had been unlawfully removed from their jobs by Elon Musk and his Doge bros, who did not have the authority to do so. He ordered the administration to, quote, immediately reinstate thousands of these workers that had been fired at the Department of Veterans Affairs, Agriculture, Defense, Energy, Interior, and Treasury, and that the judge said he might expand that order to include unlawfully fired workers at other agencies. That case was brought by the nation's largest federal workers union, the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, as well as other unions. And we noted at the time that a similar case was underway in a federal court in Maryland brought by 20 Democratic state attorneys general. And no sooner did we get off the air last week than that judge in that case also reached a decision on the at least temporary reinstatement of workers at now 18 federal agencies that the judge found to have been improperly terminated, including the Departments of Agriculture, Commerce, Education, Energy, Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, Labor, State, Transportation, Treasury, Housing and Urban Development, Veterans Affairs, the Environmental Protection Agency, Small Business Administration, General Services Administration, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. All of those workers fired from all of those agencies, it was done so unlawfully. The Trump administration immediately filed appeals in both of those cases, but for now, the ruling went against them. The state, the states charged in that Maryland case that the agencies and their heads, who are named as defendants in the lawsuit, failed to follow proper procedures for carrying out mass layoffs, including providing states with 60 days notice. The judge in the case, Judge James Bredar, found, quote, lacking the notice to which they were entitled, the states were not ready for the impact of so many unemployed people. They are still scrambling to catch up. They remain impaired in their capacities to meet the legal obligations to their citizens, he wrote in his memorandum explaining the decision. He ordered 18 federal agencies to reinstate probationary workers fired through what he called illegal reductions in force, and they were to be reinstated by this past Monday at 1 p.m. for at least a period of 14 days. During that time, he said the court would likely consider longer relief. The judge's order covered probationary employees nationwide, not just those in states named as plaintiffs in the lawsuit. It also blocks agencies from carrying out future reductions in force, quote, whether formally labeled as such or not, unless it complies with relevant laws and regulations, including providing notices to states. Under federal law, states are required under the law to have a rapid response team to provide federal workers who are impacted by mass layoffs with support, including job transition services. The goal of the teams is to reduce fired employees' reliance on public assistance. In court, the state said they had been forced to expend extra resources trying to track down those terminated and meanwhile have seen unemployment claims soar in their states. They said they also cited the loss of tax revenue from people newly jobless that was causing them harm. And on Tuesday this week, there were still more related court losses, at least for now, for the administration. A federal judge late on Tuesday ordered the government to reinstate U.S. Agency for International Development Systems, USAID systems, on Tuesday, ruling that the accelerated shutdown of the agency led by Elon Musk, quote, likely violated the U.S. Constitution in multiple ways. U.S. District Judge Theodore Chuang, if that's how you say it, ordered Musk's Department of Government Efficiency to reinstate access to email, payment, security notifications, and all other electronic systems for all current USAID employees and contractors. He also ordered the department to provide written confirmation of compliance to the court within 7 days, which is smart given this administration, who feels they can just ignore federal court orders. But boy, is this efficient, huh? Firing all these workers, going to court, defending the firing, having to put them back, having to find them, having to reinstate access to their email, to their payments, to their security levels, to their equipment, computers. Very efficient. Boy, are we trimming waste, fraud, and abuse from the federal government, aren't we?
Apparently, that's not the actual goal.
What? The court will require the defendants within 14 days to secure and submit written agreements among all necessary parties that ensures that USAID will be able to reoccupy their headquarters at its original location. That would be the D.C. headquarters where, you will recall, Musk ordered the letters on the front of the building to be chiseled out of the stone. He also ordered the judge ordered Doge and Musk not to take any action regarding USAID without express authorization of a USAID official with the legal authority to do so. And of course, Musk took to X to post something critical of the judge, saying it was a partisan ruling by a Democrat appointed judge. The order states that the parties, Musk and Doge, who are not in charge of USAID, which oversees foreign aid around the world to help keep starving children alive and prevent the world's worst diseases from spreading and eventually coming to our own shores, among many other things, that they cannot terminate employees, place them on leave, close USAID buildings, or terminate service contracts until all of this is sorted out. These are, of course, political wins for those who oppose the administration's destruction of the administrative state and the constitutional order. But they are also, in addition to that, very much potentially life-saving wins as well, especially at USAID. Over the weekend, the New York Times' Nicholas Kristof offered a gut-wrenching 2,700-word report that starts this way. Quote, as the world's richest men slash American aid for the world's poorest children, they insist that all is well. Quote, no one has died as a result of a brief pause to do a sanity check on foreign aid funding, Elon Musk said, repeating for emphasis, no one. No one has died. That reports Christoph in no uncertain terms, is not true. In South Sudan, one of the world's poorest countries, the efforts by Musk and President Trump are already leading children to die. Peter Donde was a 10-year-old infected with HIV from his mother during childbirth, but American aid kept Peter strong even as his parents died from AIDS. A program started by President George W. Bush called PEPFAR saved 26 million lives from AIDS, and one was Peter's. Under PEPFAR, an outreach health worker ensured that Peter and other AIDS orphans got their medicines. Then, in January, Trump and Musk effectively shuttered the U.S. Agency for International Development, perhaps illegally, as the judge, in fact, found today, and that PEPFAR outreach program was ended. Orphans were on their own. Without the help of the community health worker, Peter was unable to get his medicine, so he became sick and he died in late February, according to Moses Okeni Labani, a health outreach worker who helped manage care for Peter and 144 other vulnerable children. The immediate cause of death was an opportunistic pneumonia infection as Peter's viral load increased and his immunity diminished, said the worker, adding that, quote, if USAID would be here, Peter Donde would not have died. Akol Deng, an 8-year-old girl, was also infected with HIV at birth and likewise remained alive because of American assistance. Then, in America, Akol lost her ID card, and there was no longer a caseworker to help her get a new card and medicines. She, too, became sick and died. Another household kept alive by American aid was that of Jennifer Inya, a 35-year-old single mom, and her 5-year-old son, Evan Anzu, both of them HIV positive. Last month, after the aid shut down, Inya became sick, and she died. A week later, Evan, her son, died as well. That according to David Ira Simon, a community health worker who assisted them. Decisions by billionaires in Washington quickly cost the lives of a mother and her son. Quote, many more children will die in the coming months, said Margaret Amjuma, a health worker who confirmed the deaths of Peter and Akol. On a 9-day trip through East African villages and slums, writes Nicholas Christoph, I heard that refrain repeatedly. While some are already dying because of the decisions in Washington, the toll is likely to soar in the coming months as stockpiles of medicine and food are drawn down and as people become weaker and sicker. Two women, Martha Wan, 25, and Viola Kaiden, 28, a mother of three, have already died because they lived in a remote area of South Sudan and could not get antiretroviral drugs when USAID shut down supply lines, according to a health volunteer who supported them. She told Christoph that her own supply of antiretrovirals is also about to run out. She said, I'm going to develop the virus. My viral load will go high. I will develop TB. I will have pneumonia. She sighed deeply and added, we are going to die. Yes, writes Christoph, this may eventually save money for U.S. taxpayers. How much? Well, the cost of first-line HIV medications to keep a person alive is less than 12 cents a day. He says, I asked Labani, the health worker, if he had ever heard of Elon Musk. He had not. So I explained that Musk is the world's wealthiest man and has said that no one is dying because of USAID cuts. That is wrong, Labani said, sounding surprised that anyone could be so oblivious. In South Africa, where more than 7 million people are HIV positive, the Desmond Tutu Health Foundation estimates that ending PEPFAR would lead to more than 600,000 deaths over a decade in that country alone. Christoph's heartbreaking, Pulitzer Prize-deserving report goes on to other countries and many more deaths that have already occurred due to lack of AIDS prevention medicine, lack of vaccines, lack of food aid with Elon Musk and Donald Trump's shuttering of USAID. He says, we worked with experts at the Center for Global Development who tried to calculate how many lives overall are at risk if American humanitarian assistance remains frozen or slashed. While these estimates are inexact and depend on how much aid continues, they suggest that a cataclysm may be beginning around the developing world. An estimated 1,650,000 people could die within a year without American foreign aid for HIV prevention and treatment. An estimated 500,000 people could die within a year without American funding for vaccines. An estimated 550,000 people could die within a year without American funding for food aid. An estimated 290,000 people could die within a year without American funding for malaria prevention. An estimated 310,000 people could die within a year without U.S. funding for tuberculosis prevention. Christoph concludes this way. I recognize we cannot save every hungry child around the world. I agree that USAID is imperfect and should be reformed. I appreciate that helping people is harder than it looks. I understand that there are difficult trade-offs in allocating tax dollars. Yet, he writes, I think most Americans would both welcome some reforms and also be proud to see how we save the lives of hungry children and sick orphans around the world by allocating just 24 cents of every $100 of national income to aid. By the way, that's 0.24% of revenue to the federal government. That's all it cost. Christoph says, and I find it odious when the world's richest man cackles about America shoving programs for needy children, quote, into the wood chipper, as Musk did. When you meet those dying children and look into their eyes and hold their hands and feel faint heartbeats flutter, you can't bear the gleeful laughter. You see children like your own and hang your head in shame. More ahead today. I will try to cheer things up a little bit, though no promises, as we plan to close with Desi Doyen's latest Green News Report.
So there's that.
I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here.
Yes, they are. That Trump administration is here, and its clown show continues. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. While the clowns in the Trump administration, including Elon Musk and his Doge bros, are claiming that no one has died around the world due to their ridiculous, cruel, ill-considered, and according to a federal judge on Tuesday, unlawful and constitutional closure of the U.S. Agency for International Development, counter to the truth of the AIDS victims and starving children who are already dying because the world's richest man thought it would be efficient to cut off U.S. foreign aid. Well, these clowns also seem to be killing Americans with their layoffs and closures and mucking around with critical computer systems. At least they're killing them on paper in this case. Writes Danny Westneed at the Seattle Times this week. Quote, Doge has 10 staffers at Social Security in hunt for dead people, the headlines read this past week. Westneed writes, I found a dead person on Social Security right here in Seattle on Capitol Hill, he writes. Of course, the circumstances of Ned Johnson's death were completely the opposite of what Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency had claimed was rampant. Quote, "You wake up one day and you discover you're dead," Johnson told me. "It's been truly surreal," he said. "That's the biggest difference," says Westney. My deceased guy turns out to be very much alive. Musk is contending that hordes of dead people are listed as alive in the Social Security databases and are fraudulently still drawing benefits, which the Social Security director disputes. Johnson, however, is 82 and still kicking. Yet sometime last month, someone or something led Social Security to both tag him as dead and start clawing back his benefits. Johnson's strange trip through the netherworld began in February when a letter from his bank arrived addressed to his wife, Pam. Quote, "We recently received notification of Leonard A. Johnson's passing," it began. "We offer our sincerest condolences." At first, she thought it was a scam. Her husband, after all, was sitting right there. But the bank got to the point. Quote, "We know this is a difficult time and we're here to help," the bank wrote. "We received a request from Social Security Administration to return benefits paid to Leonard A. Johnson's account after their passing. There's nothing you need to do. We've deducted the funds from Leonard A. Johnson's account." Uh-oh. It itemized how $5,201 had been stricken from their bank account on the grounds that Ned wasn't justified to get those benefits because he was dead.
$5,000.
For 2 months, that was for payments he'd received in December and January. Ned found that his February Social Security check had not been paid, and he's yet to receive his March check either. His Medicare insurance had also been canceled. He called the bank first, and they said an electronic notification had been triggered on February 18 that he had died back in November. But "I'm on the phone with you right now," he told them. Also, he asked, "What did I die of?" "Take it up with Social Security," the bank said. What followed was a nearly three-week battle to resurrect himself. He called Social Security two or three times a day for 2 weeks, with each call put on hold and then eventually disconnected. You ever had that happen to you? I have, not with Social Security. But with, you know, other tech support or whatever, you hold, and then you're disconnected. It is maddening. This was happening two or three times a day as Ned Johnson, who wasn't dead, was trying to reach Social Security. All of this as Elon Musk and the Doge Bros, according to recent reporting, are firing Social Security workers, closing brick and mortar offices, and trying to figure out how they can also close down the agency's phone service entirely, forcing the elderly and disabled to either do everything online, get it right, grandma, or somehow make your way to a Social Security office that they haven't yet shut down, which could be hundreds of miles away. Just to receive your benefits, not your entitlements, but your benefits, the benefits that you paid into, your money, to get your money that they are holding for you. Finally, someone answered the phone and gave Ned Johnson an appointment at Social Security for March 13. Then he got a call delaying that to March 24. In a huff, he went to the office himself. It's one of those buildings that is, in fact, proposed to be closed under what the AP called, quote, "a frenetic and error-riddled push by Elon Musk's budge-cutting advisors." "It was like a Depression-era scene," Johnson said, with a queue 50 deep jockeying for the attention of two tellers. The employees were kind, but they were beleaguered. "They are also so understaffed down there," he said. "They think the office is about to be closed down and they don't know where they're going to go to. It feels like the agency's being gutted," he said. After waiting for 4 hours, Johnson admits he jumped the line. He said, "I saw an opening and I kind of rushed up and told them that I was listed as dead, and that seemed to get their attention." Once in front of a human, Johnson said he was able to quickly prove that he was alive. Using his passport and his gift of gab, they pledged to fix his predicament, and on Thursday this past week, the bank called to say that it had returned the deducted deposits to his account. As of Friday morning, however, he still has not received February or March's benefit payments. Quote, when I was in that line, I was thinking that if I was living solely off of Social Security, I could be close to dumpster diving right about now. What's concerning is that no one has been able to tell him how he ended up in the agency's death master file. Nobody knows or nobody's saying. Johnson said his takeaway is that Social Security needs help with its databases, but especially with enough staffing to answer the phones. The announced plan from the new administration, however, is to cut 7,000 employees. This past week, the news outlet ProPublica reported on a recording of a meeting in which the director, a Trump appointee, suggested ominously that DOJ's suggested changes could cause the agency to collapse.
Bingo.
That, of course, is what the previous administrator of Social Security,
Martin O'Malley,
had predicted could happen. He actually said it would happen within the next, 60 to 90 days, he thought.
Yeah, it does seem like they are trying to break Social Security.
It seemed hyperbolic at the time that Martin O'Malley originally said that. It is seeming less so in the ensuing days. The Trump-appointed acting director at SSA also debunked the idea that dead people in this call that ProPublica was able to get a recording of, debunked the idea that dead people are being used to fraudulently claim benefits in any widespread manner, as both Musk and Trump continue to claim over and over again, despite the fact that it's a lie. The director said there are 110-year-old and older people in one of the databases, but those people are, quote, not in pay status. They're not actually being paid benefits. Those are records we never bother with. For his part, Johnson says he felt the agency was super aggressive in the opposite direction. Money was unilaterally deducted from his bank account before he even had a chance to react to the news of his untimely death. People living check to check could be decimated, he said. I'm okay with mistakes being made, he said, but I'm not sure how much they're focused on fixing these kinds of mistakes going forward as they are in using the mistakes to tear down the place. His wife Pam said, you sort of have no choice but to laugh it off, but it seems like it's going to get worse. She's got that right. I'm not sure how much greater I want America to be again at this point. For Ned Johnson, he is hopeful that he has a new lease on life. But does he? Agents caution him that once you're tagged as dead in the electronic morgue, it floats in the ether and can haunt you again like there's a ghost in the machine. Sure enough, writes Westneed, after I met Johnson on Friday and verified, in fact, he was a live human being. I went home and Googled him. One of those people search sites popped up with a listing at his address, Leonard A. Johnson, Seattle, Washington. It read, deceased. Nonetheless, Donald Trump's purges of the federal government continue despite all of this, despite all of the errors, despite all of the judge's orders. The Trump administration is now set to cut more than 20% of the staff at the taxpayer help branch of the IRS, according to Washington Post. At tax time, need help filling out those tax forms this year? Know how hard it is to reach a live human being at the IRS already? Well, it's about to get 20% harder. Under a court order, the Trump administration has moved to reinstate at least 24,000 federal probationary employees, as we discussed earlier, government-wide, following the court orders. But U.S. District Judge William Alsup of San Francisco, one of the first judge who ordered them back to work, is demanding that the government confirm whether those reinstated employees are actually being immediately placed on administrative leave en masse, as some reports are now suggesting. Judge Alsup said that, in fact, if they were doing that, that would be in violation of the preliminary injunction that he issued ordering their reinstatement. We will see. And at the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, according to the Times, there are now, quote, plans to eliminate its scientific research arm, firing as many as 1,155 chemists, biologists, toxicologists, and other scientists.
Those are the people that put together the independent data that underlies our regulatory system of, you know, cleaning up the air and water.
And keeping people alive.
Yeah.
And healthy.
Yeah.
I'm sure no one will die from those cuts either. Right, Elon? Speaking of, the Green News Report is next on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. The Bradcast survives thanks to you and your support. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us continue to do over your public airwaves what we try to do 5 days a week. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thank you. Desi Doyen, has Elon Musk cut any of Elon Musk's contracts yet with the federal government?
I don't think so.
Interesting. All right, well, speaking of cuts and the dangers they pose, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
My room was right here. And, like, right here was where my door was.
Tornadoes, wildfires, and dust storms wreak havoc across central and southern U.S.
It most assuredly will affect the availability, the frequency, and the accuracy, honestly, of the warnings.
Trump administration mass firings endanger accuracy of weather forecasts. Plus, Trump Interior Department rescinds vital permits for New Jersey offshore wind project.
All of those ridiculous stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Before we get to Elon, can you believe Canada tried to shut off our electricity? I mean, it's almost like they want us to invade.
It's almost as if Fox News wants us to invade under a Republican president. Again. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, before the next war begins, what do you got for us today?
Well, heartbreaking news. As we go to air, more than 40 people have been killed in a monster storm that left a trail of destruction across 8 states in the central and southern parts of the U.S. over the weekend. The brutal system generated a multi-pronged extreme weather onslaught. Dozens of deadly tornadoes across the south, blinding dust storms caused fatal mass highway pileups in Texas and Kansas. More than 130 wildfires whipped by hurricane-force winds across Oklahoma's parched landscape. Studies show that climate change, driven by the burning of fossil fuels, is altering the environment in which severe thunderstorms and tornadoes form, intensifying atmospheric volatility. Studies also show that tornado outbreaks are getting larger and more frequent, including an increase in dangerous nighttime tornadoes.
You don't say.
In other news, the Trump administration has launched another round of mass firings and budget cuts at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Another round?
Yes, and the National Weather Service, severely straining both agencies' ability to handle such large-scale weather disasters, even as climate change worsens them.
Brilliant.
As of Friday, about 20% of NOAA's staff is laid off, gone, including hundreds of scientists and meteorologists. Dozens of local weather forecast offices are slated for closure with tornado season underway and hurricane season fast approaching. Here's former NOAA Administrator Dr. Rick Spinrad on CBS News.
There's a big capital expense associated with that. Airplanes, radars, satellites. Who's going to pick those up? And we don't have the capability to sustain or replace those. I think at some point people are going to recognize we need these capabilities for the public good, which after all is the role of government. The question is how much damage will we sustain before we're able to turn around the damage that's already been done?
Good question, isn't it?
Yep. In the Financial Times, the insurance sector is warning that mass firings at key federal science agencies threatens the public weather and geospatial data that the industry uses to manage natural disaster risks, potentially raising prices for consumers. CNN reports that the oceans are currently undergoing profound, unexplained changes impacting the nation's fisheries, but the Trump administration has fired the scientists working to understand those changes, which experts say could not come at a worse time.
Oh, well, we'll never know.
At the Environmental Protection Agency, an internal memo obtained by the New York Times directs the closure of offices responsible for addressing the disproportionately high levels of heavy pollution faced by poor and minority communities living near industrial facilities, who have much higher rates of cancers, asthma, heart disease, and more compared with the national average.
Yeah, but helping them would be DEI.
In a similar vein, the Trump administration recently denied a disaster recovery funding request from Asheville, North Carolina, for Hurricane Helene damage until the city cut out a program intended to boost participation by female and minority contractors. Mm. Finally, in a big blow to New Jersey's economy, the Trump EPA has invalidated a critical permit for an offshore wind farm granted 6 months ago, citing Donald Trump's Inauguration Day executive order freezing all permitting for such projects. Construction on the Atlantic Shores project cannot begin now without additional review and approval by the agency. Again, that permit was granted 6 months ago. Experts warn the abrupt cancellation will kill thousands of local wind energy manufacturing jobs and likely chill investment in the U.S. for all types of infrastructure.
Making America great again. See ya in court. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm older now, but still running.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yep.
Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's broadcast, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That free service made possible by those of you kind enough to hit a donate button while you're there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Thank you, especially now. You can drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at the Brad Blog. And you can find Desi Doyen there as well. She is
at Green News Report.
That's it. You'll find us at all of the above until you find us here next time. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.